5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Welcome you back. Yes, it is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri. And Chris, every so often there are episodes where we run to the microphone. Because sometimes I kind of speed walk to the mic and talk boxing. I love talking boxing. But there are other episodes where you sprint. You, Chris Algieri, sprint as if you're getting ready to fight Ruslan Provodnikov in 2014. Because Beterbiev and Bivol are finally getting in a ring in Saudi Arabia. We're actually getting this fight, and we're going to break it down like no other. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. Not only did I run, I did a one-handed cartwheel on the way to my room today to get this going. Yeah, I'm very excited for this fight. Can't believe it's here. I didn't think this was going to happen, and now we're here.
I still don't believe it.
I know, right? Until they're in the ring, anything can happen.
There's always those until they're in the ring crowd. Like there's the older guard of boxing fans. Until they're both in the ring, I don't believe it. That's me.
I'm a crotchety old man now.
Getting old and crotchety. This episode's brought to you by PPV.com. It is the premier landing spot to watch pay-per-view events, whether it's AEW wrestling, whether it's big time boxing, December 14th, Tank Davis versus Lamont Roach. This fight is not a pay-per-view. You're going to be able to watch Beterbiev Bivol on ESPN Plus. You're going to have to switch off if you want to watch the undercard, which is on DAZN. Regular DAZN. So the old switcheroo, which is a very strange thing. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we get into Beterbiev and Bivol? Nick Ball won last weekend, looked phenomenal. I think
fun fight,
guys at featherweight.
Yeah, that was good. Nick Ball looked good. Even Ronnie looked good. I mean, he fought really well. He went out on the shield. But being 34 is being 34, and it showed up because Nick Ball's a badass, and I think he's got a lot of good fights in his future.
Yeah, I think he's established himself as one of the better featherweights in a loaded division. So that happened last weekend. Janibek won. That was just kind of ho-hum. I'll tell you what, though. Whoever, I got to get his name. The guy from Houston last week, I forgot his name, sorry, who called in and asked about Mosley versus Tank at 135.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Bro, set off a storm.
Like, really?
Twitterverse talking about it, getting other, like Dan Rayfield just tweeting about it on his own. I see people it just started a massive debate. People throwing arrows at me, of course, because thinking that I thought that Tank could beat him just by even asking the question. They believe it's disrespectful. You know, guys I'm looking at these Twitter threads, and it's like, Dan knows what he's doing. He's trying to get clicks, blah, blah, blah. This guy's in the PBC cult. Dude, I'm just asking a question. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to think. But that question got a lot of people thinking, bro. There's a lot of Tank.
Yeah.
It got me thinking there's a lot of Tank super fans. And there's a lot of people that never watch boxing beyond, like, 2015.
Yeah, and that's a big thing that I've noticed with a lot of these young fighters today, talking to them about fighters of yesteryear, even like, 15 years ago. It's crazy. And then even us, it spurred, you know, even us to I was sending you clips of, you know, 135 pound Shane this weekend being like, dude, this guy beats up Tank. Forget it. If you don't know about 135 pound Shane, man, go look it up. That guy was a bad man.
It's a fun hypothetical, and I really kind of steer away from hypotheticals because it's like kind of hard to.
Yeah, it's barbershop
low hanging fruit, right? It's low hanging fruit. It's the easiest way to farm engagement on social media. But that was a fun question, and it really got you thinking, and it kind of showed the divide between the older fans and the younger fans, the PBC fans, the Gervonta fans, and regular boxing fans from back in the day. But that was fun. No, it's not fun. I was watching Teofimo Lopez go back and forth with Terrence Crawford on Twitter. The most boring back and forth ever. Like, Crawford doesn't even want to fight him in the ring. He wants to beat his ass outside of the ring like his dad should have. That's the words of Crawford. Teofimo throwing more racist words out there. What's the deal with this racism? Everything was just racist in Buck. Like, are these kids, like, what are they doing? Talk about bananas, and we got Ryan Garcia being just blatantly racist. You got Teofimo throwing these words out there. It's just like, what other sport can you get away with something like this?
Well, there's always a racial component, and I forgot who I was talking to about this recently. But when you come into gyms, like, race is a big part of boxing, and it's just there's a racial divide. There's styles that kind of go with certain races, and we all talk about it just like that. So it's interesting that there's a lot of blurred lines when it comes to what's allowed and what's not on the racial tip when it comes to boxing gyms. But that's also part of the beauty of the sport. It brings a lot of people together. So you get these melting pots where people are comfortable talking candidly. But when you bring it to the Twitterverse, nothing's candid in Twitterverse. Nothing's okay. Everything's negative. So that's an interesting thing to bring about.
It's an ethnic sport. It will always be an ethnic sport. It's a Puerto Rican style. It's Mexican style. There's all different styles. You're one individual fighter representing an entire country. And they base the marketing off fights based off their race. I mean, that's what boxing has been forever.
This promotional is like signings are based off race. Like, it's like so much of the sport is based off that.
I get that 100%. I mean, that's part of the sport. But like, there's no room for what Teofimo said a few weeks back.
No.
And then doubling.
I actually didn't even see what he said. I don't even want to hear it. But
right, he said something just horrible. Like, the worst thing he'd say about the black race. And then he puts out an apology. And then he just doubles down again with Crawford. And it's just the worst part. Like, the Twitter is just out of control with these fighters. They have too much time in their hands. I don't know why Crawford was even giving him all that attention, because I just don't think they'll ever fight. I mean, they're with Top Rank. But one thing that did come out of it, though, is that Teofimo was in litigation with Top Rank, which was rumored for a while. And he went on that Mace and Cameron show. And pretty much said, I've never cleared more than $1 million in a fight. Never with Lomachenko, not with Josh Taylor. And that got people thinking, and Crawford kind of made fun of him for it. So that did come from it. So I don't know if we see Teofimo in the ring for the rest of the year. He's talking about February. So there was some.
I don't know how I can believe that. How has he never made $1 million?
I don't believe anything that comes out of Teofimo's mouth.
No, I.
He talks in circles.
Guys, I wasn't a Top Rank fighter. I made way more than that with Top Rank a couple times. So I don't understand how at this point, especially in this year.
He does this, Teofimo. He loves to talk to business and the industry and all that stuff. I just have a hard time believing him, but. Thank God we have a huge fight to talk about. Let's get into the fights. Let's get into the undisputed fight, Chris. Bivol, Beterbiev, Bivol. I think we're going with Beterbiev, Bivol, because Beterbiev has
he's got more belts. Yeah, 100%.
Got more belts, even though ESPN has him ranked number two light heavyweight. They have Bivol number one. I don't know about that.
Wow.
I saw a graphic on ESPN.
It's a little aggressive.
It is a little aggressive, but this is the best fight. Beterbiev Bivol is the best fight that you can make in boxing today, even with Beterbiev closing in on 40 years old, even with it being a few years too late. We're talking about number one and number two light heavyweights. We're talking top 10 pound for pound. Bivol handed Canelo a loss. Beterbiev's got 100% knockout rate. You talk about the defensive mastery of Bivol, and you talk about the power punching and all-around boxing of Beterbiev. This is one of the hardest fights I ever had to handicap. This is a true 50-50, one of the best fights in years on paper. Let's hope that it plays out that way.
Yes, this is the best fight that can be made in the sport today. It's you got 200-feet guys, you got unification in a very, very deep, tough weight class. You've got very contrasting styles in terms of what each guy can do. It's not exactly a boxer versus puncher matchup, but it kind of is, especially from looking at it from outside perspective. It's boxer versus puncher. Although I do think that Bivol's a better puncher than his record shows, and then I think that Beterbiev is a much better boxer than people think. So I don't think this is a strict boxer versus puncher, but historically, it's going to be looked at in that way, which always makes for the best matchups, most intriguing matchups, and one that's really, like you said, really hard to handicap or tell who's actually going to win this fight.
Yeah, but Beterbiev, it's like, if you just call him a puncher, like there's people coming out.
You don't know what you're looking at.
That's disrespectful. It is, because, but that's just what we do in boxing. You try to simplify it as much as you can. This is a boxer in Bivol versus a puncher in Beterbiev. It's 100% knockout rate. But if you've watched Bivol over the, excuse me, if you've watched Beterbiev over the years, you know that he is so much more than just a crushing puncher and devastating knockout artist. He has great boxing IQ. We'll get to your thoughts on the categories later. He's got a great jab. He's top 10 in boxing in terms of jabs landed. This is Beterbiev. He's obviously number one in knockout rate, or tied with some others. And he does a lot of things in there. He throws a lot of punches. Throws 60, put a pace on you. Throws 60, 65, 70 punches.
Which most punchers don't do.
Exactly. So, like, we say that he is a quote-unquote puncher, but Beterbiev is just so more. We can start with Beterbiev. Like, this guy, man, his last five fights, Chris. Callum Smith, TKO 7. Anthony Yard, TKO 8. Joe Smith, TKO 2. Marcus Brown, TKO 9. Adam Dennis, TKO 10. I don't know how Dennis made it to 10 rounds. Maybe Beterbiev felt bad for him. But this guy has just stops everyone. More than just a puncher. Just a great fighter, even at age 40. You know, isn't showing any signs of slippage.
Yeah, I would argue he's been getting better in recent years.
Scary.
Which is scary. Scary. I mean, the Callum Smith fight, he really showed his dominance with his boxing. Very, very, very impressive. And Callum Smith can really fight. You know, I was actually saying, Callum Smith could actually beat Beterbiev. He had nothing for him.
Yeah, I know. And I'm looking at Beterbiev's stats right now. 60 over his last, this is his last 10 fights. He's thrown 60 punches around. He is landing 20 punches around, which is great. He's 20 of 60, which is really good. Four body shots around. Jabs, 6.5 jabs per round, which is...
That's landed?
Jabs landed per round, which is very good. It'll get you in the top 10 of all in all of boxing. And his defense is really good. He's only getting hit with 16%. So this guy has got it all in Beterbiev. We can jump over to Bivol now in his last five. Malik Zinat, that was his most recent fight with a stoppage. His first stoppage in years because he stood and traded more. And I feel like he was hearing it from some of the critics, and he gets a stoppage. Lyndon Arthur, UD, Gilberto Zerto Ramirez, decision. Canelo, decision. Umar Salamov, decision. So Bivol is Bivol. We know who he is. The Canelo fight was his coming out party where we knew he was good. He wasn't like, you remember HBO in the Monaco series, and they were really pushing Bivol really hard. They had him as the second coming of Triple G, and he just never really turned into that. You know, it's fine what he is now. He's a master boxer, but he never lived up to the hype that HBO put on him until that Canelo fight, until that Canelo win. He hasn't really done a lot since, unfortunately, the stupid politics of the sport. But this is a chance for Bivol to be like, yo, I am the best. One of the best of this generation. Clearly the best light heavyweight.
Yeah, well, he's saying he wants to be the best in the sport right now. And with a win here, he's got a really good argument for it. Because you start to look at him and, yeah, is he the most dynamic guy? No. Is he the guy that, you know, is going to be getting so many eyes on him because he's just such a star? No. But you're going to look at it and be like, if you get in the ring with him, can you beat him? Even theoretical matchups, how do you beat the guy? If he comes out and he wins this fight, especially if he does it impressively, you have to look at this like, hey, how do you beat this guy? The style seems to be a puzzle that cannot be solved right now because he's in his prime. He's been able to do this with the best guys in the world. I mean, guys, listen, that Canelo fight was not even close. No one has ever beat Canelo the way that Bivol was able to. So, and I think people need to go back and watch that fight again. He was very, very dominant. And you could see Canelo even kind of give up on trying to win that fight toward the end. He was, you know,
took the will out of him.
I got nothing for this guy, and he didn't. So, That's when you have to look at this guy like, hey, this guy literally might be the best in the world. Because how do you beat him? Kind of like how we talked about Usyk. Like, I don't love Usyk's style, but it's hard to argue how you know, like, who beats the guy? How do you beat him? The guy just knows how to win. But Bivol, his style is very different. That style you look at and you're like, damn it. And from a boxing eye, I'm like, that is a puzzle. His judge of range, his distance, his timing, all those intangible things that are so hard to teach, this guy does seamlessly. It makes him one of those guys where you look at it like, I don't know how to solve this.
And Chris, he's 33 years old. He's a year before you're the almighty 34, where you say a fighter falls off the cliff.
33, when everything starts to fall off. So he's still in his prime.
So he's still in his prime. He can still move. He depends on movement. He has a plus 17.8 plus minus. That is how much he lands versus how much opponents land on him. That is third in all of boxing. His 8.8 jabs per round landed is number one in all of boxing. Opponents land just 13%. That is number one in all of boxing. They land just six punches per round. That is number two. He throws the highest amount of jabs per round, 66%. That's number one in all of boxing. He's top 10 in pretty much everything, 25% of his jabs. He throws the seventh lowest power punches per round, which is a very frustrating part of Bivol's game, but it is Bivol's game. This is what he does. He will jab you to death. 66% of his thrown punches are jabs. He will not get hit. Only gets hit with 13%. He will land. He's very precise. We saw it in the Canelo fight. He was throwing punches on his arms, throwing punches, just touching them until he found spots against the ropes. Will he do that against Beterbiev? We have to see. But we're talking about a guy in Bivol who's 33 years old, who has shown zero signs of slippage. The things I hear is, can he keep that pace? Can he do the in and out? Can he be on the balls of his feet? Can he do all that for 12 rounds? He has to fight the perfect fight, not Beterbiev. I'm not saying that, but some are saying that, Chris. But, I mean, look at these numbers from Bivol. This guy is world-class.
Oh, no, there's no question. I'm actually looking at a different number. I know you're the numbers guy, but I'm looking at total rounds. 190 for Bivol, 98 for Artur Beterbiev. That's the thing about punchers, man. They don't get a lot of time in the ring. And Bivol's got, 190 is that's a lot of rounds for 23 fights.
You know, he's the UD 12, king.
Yes,
he's the UD
he's
merchant.
Been 12 many, many times. And I think that this fight is gonna, it's gonna go rounds. It's gonna go rounds. So it's gonna be interesting. Exactly the question you posed: can he do it for 12 rounds in front of a destroyer like Beterbiev?
That's my. I have a burning questions section, and we'll do it right now. One day we'll have this sponsored by what's something Mike's Red Hot. You know, like burning. I'm manifesting it. Mike's Red Hot, hot sauce. This is the burning questions.
Tabasco, Tapatio. Maybe we get the Mexican market in. Tapatio, get in there.
You gotta just speak it into the ether. Give him Mike's Red Hot some free publicity right now. Burning question number one, Chris: can Dmitry Bivol fight a perfect fight for 12 rounds? Can he be a defensive wizard? Because he faced Canelo, but Canelo's not Beterbiev. I think Beterbiev is a lot more destructive. Can Bivol fight that in out defensive perfect 12%? He only gets hit with. Can he do that for 36 minutes?
Well, he's going to have to. So if you're thinking he's going to win, then you're thinking yes, he can. Or if he has a chance to win, I should say, because there's really no other way for him to win the fight except providing a perfect fight and being able
to knock him out
and be able to do it all 12 rounds. I actually do think he can. I think he can at this age, from what I've seen from him and what he's able to do in fights, especially even late, he doesn't really slow down. You know, I don't know what the numbers are. I know you're the numbers guy, but he doesn't seem like his footwork slows down. Maybe his punch output might, but you know, the guy stays switched on for 12. So I do think he can do it for all 12.
That's the question in this fight. That's how Bivol wins this fight. He's got to be perfect. I mean, you're fighting.
And that doesn't mean he wins
a
fight, but mind you, even if he does, you know, it doesn't mean he wins a fight because Beterbiev can win a decision as well. I'm not saying that's the only way he, you know.
He's never gone the distance, which is crazy. Right. I haven't thought about that. You've never seen Beterbiev at the end of a fight, you know, with the referee between his opponent waiting, which is crazy thing to think about. But with Bivol, and the perfection, because Beterbiev is perfect, 100% knockout rate, and he will find you and he will end you. So Bivol has to be on top of his game defensively. His last fight, he got hit a lot, hit the most in his career. That's because Zinad came forward, and that's because I feel like Bivol came forward. Do you
he didn't fight a Bivol's fight. He didn't fight a
why
fight
did he do that? Did he do that to maybe show everyone I can? Did he do that because maybe he wants to show he's going to do that against Beterbiev? I'm curious why Bivol did that. What do you think in your opinion?
I think he did it because he could. I think he knew he had someone in front of him that couldn't hurt him, and that he was going to make a stand. And whether the ultimate idea was, hey, let's bump up this fight, let's get people more excited for it, or just like, you know what, let me get under fire a little bit in a real situation, because I'm definitely going to get under fire when it comes to that fight. So maybe just to prepare himself a bit, maybe more for his own mental. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who puts on for anyone else. He's putting on for Bivol. Bivol does what Bivol needs to do. So I feel like he probably went in there and being like, you know what, let me get a little abrasion on my eye. Let me feel a little, you know, punching on my gloves, on my elbows, because it's going to happen with this guy, and this guy's going to hit. He had to dig in a little bit, which I think that's probably a good idea, even though I'm always the kind of guy, hit and don't be hit. But listen, sometimes you're going to have to.
Yeah, because some people point to it and be like, oh, look, he's falling off a little bit. You know, this guy Zinad, who's a relative unknown, was able to land some shots. And maybe, you know, the first thing to go on a fighter who depends on reflexes is reflexes. You know, you would know, Chris, you depended on reflexes yourself. Like, I don't think that will happen in this fight, but it is interesting. I mean, that is Beterbiev's path to a victory, is fighting his fight. But also, like, we will keep an eye on Bivol if he can use that movement, because we've seen, just the top of my head, like, I know Tyson Fury is nowhere near the defensive guy of Bivol, but, you know, his defense started to decline, and he was less herky-jerky. He was less movement. Maybe that's not the best comparison.
Well, I was saying, Roy Jones is always, I think, the best, you know, light heavyweight reactions guy to fall off, and is a light heavyweight fighter as well. Good weight class comparison. And Roy with such a fast decline. You know, he went from being literally unbeatable to getting knocked out by guys.
But yeah, because of the heavyweight jump. I don't think
the weight back and forth, and then just this reactions, you know, the punches that were landing. It's funny because we always be like, oh, maybe Roy never had a chin because he never really got hit. He was that good.
True.
You know, No, never got tested. And I can't say that about anybody, because Floyd had a chin. Floyd got hit. As much as Floyd was a good defensive fighter, there's many times where he actually got clipped throughout his entire career. Roy did it. Roy just, I mean, his reactions were otherworldly. And then all of a sudden he became human, and turns out he was human.
Yeah, and I don't think Bivol's going to jump up to heavyweight and come back down, even though Beterbiev was asked this week if he would go to cruiserweight, and he said yes. So that's interesting. Who knows? He's 39 years old, pushing 40, Beterbiev. That's my next burning question. Can Artur Beterbiev find Bivol? We're talking about the best defensive fighter in boxing right now is Dmitry Bivol, in terms of opponents landing on him at just 12%. How does Beterbiev find him? Does he cut the ring off? Does he do what he does with pressure? Does he mind taking some shots to get on the inside, because Bivol is the longer fighter? Burning question number two is, can Beterbiev find Bivol?
I do think so. And I think so because, like I said, I do believe he's a very good boxer. And he's a position fighter. He positions himself really well. He has fantastic balance, which is why he's able to deliver the power that he has. But he makes the ring really small. You mentioned how many punches he throws. And not every punch is meant to destroy. He'll put throwaway punches out there. He's placing his punches in order to place his opponent in a position where he can deliver. So can he do that for Bivol? That is the burning question. I do believe he has the skills to do it. My big question is he, once he gets questions? Him, once he gets him into position, and he is able to pin him down and touch him, is he going to be able to do the damage that he wants to do? Is he going to be able to land? Because that's only the first line of defense for Bivol, is his feet. So when you get him down, he's still got great hand position. He's still going to be able to move his upper body. Is Beterbiev going to be able to do the damage he needs to do when he gets Bivol in the position that he needs him to be in. So it's kind of like a two-parter. Yeah, can he get him there? Sure, but is it gonna pay off? Is really, you know, my next follow-up question.
Yeah, because we saw that in the Canelo Bivol fight. Canelo did have some moments distance, early on in the fight. He closed the distance early. It wasn't like, you know, there's that one clip that goes around of Bivol Canelo where Bivol's just touching him up. But there were other parts of that fight where Canelo was having some success.
Bombs away at times. Like, yeah. caught Bivol on the ropes and was throwing big bombs and nothing was landed.
Right. That's the thing. That's the thing is how is once Beterbiev does close that distance, which he will, like, there's going to be moments in this fight where Beterbiev closes the distance and fires off. There's going to be moments in this fight where Bivol doesn't get hit. That's the beauty of this fight is both guys are going to show off their skills. It's just going to be who's going to do it more consistently, who's going to fight their fight the best in order to get their hand raised or win the fight. But when Beterbiev does cut off the ring, because we know he's going to, is he going to land on Bivol when he has him up against the ropes? That's going to be some really intriguing moments in this fight. I'm getting juiced up for this fight, man, because we haven't seen like a real 50-50 fight in a while. Spence Crawford was supposed to be a 50-50 fight, turned out to be a washing. Usyk Fury close. A lot of people picking Fury beforehand. And this is one of these fights where you ask anyone in boxing. I had a fighter meeting yesterday for this MVP show that I'm working, and everyone was torn. It's just really, really interesting because it's like, what do you prefer type of a fight as a fan? Like, are you a Beterbiev guy where you just think he just walked through everyone? Are you like a Sweet Science guy where the boxer will always beat the puncher? Because there are two schools of thoughts there, and they're pretty much everyone is divided, and that's what this fight is.
Yeah, perfectly put. I've spoken to a lot of people that I respect in the sport, and I've argued with them, and it's back and forth in terms of, you know, who's going to do what. I've flip flopped on this fight just like I flip flop all fights. Yeah, I always come down to a hard line, but I always flip flop on close fights because I can see so many different ways going. So I've been talking to a lot of people about this fight, and yeah, there is no consensus, and that's what makes this fight that much that intriguing and that much fun.
We will have our predictions at the end of this episode. We are not signing off without giving our final predictions. I haven't even come to my final prediction yet. I don't know if Chris has either.
Going to the wire. Are we? Are we
to the end? To the end. To the bitter end.
I got my final prediction.
That's an old radio trick that I learned when I was hosting sports radio back in 2014. You tease, get people to stay on, get people to call in. Let's go to the odds brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, who is partners with us. Beterbiev, +120. Bivol is the favorite, slight favorite, Bivol.
Bivol's the favorite right now. Wow.
145. Slight. I'm surprised. I thought it would be a little bit more of a pick 'em.
I actually thought they were going to have Beterbiev on. But I will say this, though, Dan. Riyadh card. Vegas has been stumped by Riyadh fights. All these Riyadh cards, Vegas has been stumped over and over and over again. So I think it's because they're making competitive fights. And
true.
Vegas is not used to dealing with competitive fights. And our poor sport, yeah, we're used to, you know, one sided matchups.
That's very true.
So I think we got to throw out some of the odds when it comes to this one, more so than other fights.
That's why it's really hard to bet UFC, because the fights are way more
competitive.
Even.
Yep.
They're way 100%. More competitive, and I don't really follow UFC that closely, but I know that people have a lot of issues betting on it. I mean, I'm looking at my balance right now on my DraftKings account, and it's pretty healthy because there's a lot of mismatches, and we know how to identify them. This is not one of those fights. Over under 10.5. I think this is going the distance. I don't want to tip my hand too much. Then the props are crazy with all sorts of props here. And let me see. What's Bivol? Let's see. Beterbiev knockout. Beterbiev to win by knockout is, where is it? Can't find it. Good job, Dan. Good preparation.
This is great, great podcast fodder here.
This is great radio. I'm just telling you about how
great
I hosted.
Radio, that's guys.
Why I stopped hosting radio. I don't know. Can't find it. I will find it though. Better BF by knockout.
Someone in the comments is losing their mind.
Always, the comment section. The bigger the show gets, the more comments we get on YouTube. We love them. I read through them. I filter through them. I respond to everyone on YouTube. I was told to do that from a YouTube guru in order to improve engagement. Wow, Chris. Do you ever think you'd utter those words?
Yeah. I mean, I used to pump my numbers with social media. I used it quite a bit.
You were a social media guy.
Yeah.
You still are, but like you were, I remember that. You were big on Facebook. Yep. You were big on Instagram when it first came out. And that's like, you had that going, bro. That's the marketing side of Chris.
I literally said I had certain hours set out during the week based on my training times where I would sit and I would work on Facebook and social media for a few hours. It was twice a week. I would do it Mondays and Fridays.
That's beautiful. Better BF by knockout. I found it. Suck it, everyone in the comment section. Plus 185.
Wow.
Better BF by decision. Plus 700. Better BF by decision. Wow. Is that a mistake?
These are some good bets, though.
Is that a mistake? Plus 700. Better BF by decision.
See this. Like, this that is a good bet. That because I can see him winning a decision 100%.
Yes, I a knockout would be. I'll get to my next.
People forget, like, even when scorecards, Better BF isn't like losing every fight. Like, it's not like he throws a ton of punches. Like, it's not like Tank. Tank literally falls behind in fights. Better BF is not falling behind in these fights. It's not like he's like way behind and has to like pull the fight out. Like, he's in a fight and then just, you know, the fights end. So that's interesting.
Plus 700 is crazy. The thing with Better BF, you're right. It's not like he's down and he pulls a rabbit out of his hat and he knocks you out. With him, it's like, oh wow, he hasn't knocked out Marcus Brown yet. has a cut and now he's going to knock him out. But he's still winning the fight. That's the same thing with Callum Smith. He's still winning rounds, but we're like, all right, when's the knockout coming? Because he's at 100% knockout rate. But this fight, we're talking about Bivol's defensive mastery and just defensive dominance. Better BF by decision, plus 700. I might have to hop on that quick before it goes away. Better BF to win by KO, which is probably the silliest of bets.
We got to bet before this comes out because we might push the odds. They might realize they're being silly.
We're that influential. If you do bet, use DraftKings and use code InsideBoxing. I have some questions. Outcomes. Which outcome would shock you the most? Which outcome of Better BF Bivol would shock you the most? Better BF knocked out. Bivol knocked out. Better BF dominated. Bivol dominated. Neither taking over in a close, razor-thin decision.
I could see either one dominating. I can see Bivol running away with it, and I can see Better BF beating the dog shit out of Bivol all night long. I could see both of those scenarios. Probably the hardest one to swallow would be Bivol by KO. He's just not a knockout puncher. Even though Better BF is susceptible, the guy's been down. He does get hit. He gets square at times. There are opportunities to get him, and he's 40. So there's a lot of things that can happen. But yeah, that would be the biggest shocker to me.
Bivol getting stopped. Like, I don't think he's going to get one punch stopped, but Bivol taking punishment late rounds, ref waves it off, would be quite the scene.
Yeah, I could see that, though. I could definitely see that. I think a lot of people are calling that. I think if I'm talking to people, they're like, I got Better BF late stop.
Okay. That's what I'm like. You know, we do this for a living, and we try to predict fights. We try to predict outcomes. I have a hard time. Like, I'm like, what do you see? The people that look at a 50-50 fight and they are so demonstrative in who they think is going to win and have them winning in such a demonstrative way. It's like, how do you see that? Like, what in your eyes, like someone that picks, oh, I see Better BF just wiping the floor at Bivol. Like, really? Like, I think that's, I wouldn't say disrespectful to Bivol. I guess that's not my style, but I don't know. I just think that's
most times I think that's tribal. most times I think that's tribal and you're just right. rooting for your team, rooting for your guy. But there are certain times, depending on who you're talking to, some guys who do have a keen eye for the sport can see certain things and you're like, you know what? This guy is going to win. He's going to win this way because of this thing. So there are those people too. And you know, that happened. I'm trying to think of a one off the top of my head. I mean, I've done it. I've called out some weird calls that turned out to be true and I was very adamant about it because I saw something boxing wise that I thought was going to pay off or could have had a chance to pay off. And it's always risk versus reward.
Bold.
Anything can happen.
Yeah. It's a bold take. Like I'll go back to Crawford Spence, which I think is the very similar type of fight to this one, not in terms of style, but in terms of like one versus two, in terms of pound for pound, in terms of, I don't know who to pick. There wasn't that many people saying Crawford by complete destruction. The people that were like super hardcore Crawford fans.
Right.
Guys that were, you know, just telling anyone that would listen or women that were telling anyone that listened for years that Crawford is the goods and he's so much better than Spence. This fight doesn't have that type of buildup. Like,
I don't think it has those fan bases either. Like those rabid fans like Crawford and Spence do.
This is the fight for the hardcores. This was a fight that a lot of fans just didn't think was going to happen. Like they almost just wrote it off and were like, oh, we're never going to get that fight because, you know, this is Beterbiev's first unification. He's never unified. Is that true? I could be wrong. I think Joe Smith had a belt. Joe Smith did have a belt. It's not.
I don't think he had a belt.
Unification.
Was it because he won the title from Trent Hurst or Bent Hurst, whatever that guy was, and then he defended against Sullivan Barrera. Joe Smith when they fought?
Yeah, he did. Self-correction. Point is, not a lot of fans.
Well, Dan Boxrec took off the titles on their page. You notice that?
You can thank Turkey for that.
Why?
They don't observe the WBA anymore.
WBA?
Boxrec. Yeah. The WBA
specifically?
The WBA and Turkey are now in unison, and they are promoting a different Fight Facts. Remember Fight Facts from back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
Bro, yeah. It's insane. This was a story like a few months ago. I didn't really get too into it because it's like nerdy stuff, but they scrubbed all the WBA fights off of Boxrec, championship fights and stuff. Like if you go to
a
fighter's...
Joe wasn't champ when he fought Dimitri.
Was it?
Maybe that is true. No, he won.
I remember like the criticism of Beterbiev was like, is this guy ever going to unify? Is this guy ever going to fight another champion? Is he ever going to fight Bivol? And with Bivol, it's like, is this guy ever going to knock someone out? Is this guy ever going to fight Beterbiev? Is this guy ever going to, you know, become a star? And he beat Canelo and that helped him. There was a lot of fatigue with fans and thinking this fight was never going to happen. And when you don't have huge fan bases like Spence and Crawford did in their mega fight, the fight kind of falls to the wayside and you just kind of be like, all right, if we don't get it, we don't get it, but we are getting it. And you know, you can thank Riyadh Season. You do have to thank them every once in a while here for making these types of fights, because it's not like a lucrative fight. Like if this fight was, let's just say,
no,
Turkey,
if it wasn't for
exist,
Turkey, this fight doesn't happen. No.
Right. There are
there
some
be,
fights.
There wouldn't be a push for it.
Right. There are some fights out there that don't happen without Riyadh Season. He doesn't,
yes,
deserve to get the praise that for every single fight. I think that's way too much, because there are fights. Like Joshua Dubois was going to fill up Wembley Stadium with or without Turkey.
Right. Yep.
Maybe Fury and Usyk, I think, would have got over the finish line eventually. It wouldn't got, like, the thing with the Riyadh is that it happens way quicker than we've seen in years past. Like, the negotiations aren't drawn out. It's like, here's the money. Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. We're fighting. Mm-hmm. So
that's the thing. They don't have to come to terms. It's just like, hey, we got this money. Let's make it happen.
Bro, I was watching ESPN on ESPN Plus Fight Life, not just because I'm part of it. Go check it out on ESPN Plus. It's a really, really cool spec. It's like half 24/7, like half documentary style. Really cool. Episode 1 is out now, and episode 2 on Teofimo is out right now on ESPN Plus. But they had a part where Evan Korn called up Nico Ali Walsh and gave him some bad news. Like, hey, pal, you're not fighting on the Fury Usyk card. And you can hear the disappointment in Ali Walsh. And then Korn goes, that's $250,000 that you won't get. Nico Ali Walsh was set to make $250,000 to fight Saudi Arabia. Bro, that is staggering.
He's staggering, guys. Staggering number for someone at his level. That's wild.
And they asked Korn, it's like, what is the draw of Saudi? He says, the money. He's like, they are offering exorbitant prices and fighter purses that we simply cannot match, that the casinos cannot produce, and all that. I know everyone knows this by now, but to get those types of figures, go check out that special on ESPN Plus, The Fight Life. It's amazing. It's really good. And you'll see my just beautiful face in there. Not just Algeria that's on ESPN. You know, I had a, you know, you were on ESPN. I was like, how can I get on ESPN?
Well, I got there first, bud. Sorry.
No, I was there years ago. Oh, yeah. Maybe you fought on it. You fought on it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was in the 2014, background.
2014, maybe. I was there.
Does the background count? Like sitting
they
in my dad's
house.
Lap?
They were in my house in 2014. How about that?
Okay. How about Friday Night Fights sitting on my dad's lap? Does that count? If they pan to the corner, you might have saw me.
Doesn't count.
Pennsylvania.
You weren't a member of the boxing community yet.
Mystic, Connecticut was a big stop on the Friday Night Fights tour. They had the coolest hotel.
You were just a snot nose on your dad's lap. That's all you were.
Me, my brother Nick, my brother Robbie. Friday Night Fights, we'd get out of school. We'd drive up with my dad to Mystic, Connecticut. We'd hang out with Teddy, who I thought was, imagine Teddy when you're 10 years old. Like, who is this guy? He's out of his mind. Bob Papa in later years. Then you watch some really cool fights, and then you hang out in a hotel, and you go home. That's memory lane. But the point we were trying to get at here, Chris, was this fight probably does not happen.
This fight doesn't happen
without Riyadh season, because this is not a lucrative fight. I mean, these guys do not have big profiles. Like, no, you walk down the street, no one knows what Dmitry Bivol is. He had a little bit of shine after the Canelo win. He did some stuff with Barstool.
That guy killed, like, immediately. Like, he was out of the ring for a year. He beats up Zerto, which is very overlooked as a very, very good win. And then doesn't fight for a year because of the stupid politics.
What other sport do you have the pinnacle? You beat Canelo Alvarez, handed him his first loss in 8 years, the face of the sport. You beat him hands down, and then your star goes down.
And you're blackballed from the sport because of conflict in a foreign land, and you happen to be Russian. It's crazy.
Not only that, like you can point some blame at him. Like his style, the non knockouts and the decisions, like didn't really play out there. Beterbiev, you can counter that by saying Beterbiev knocks everyone out, and he doesn't. Right. He's not like a household name. That's just because he doesn't care to be. He comes off as this menacing figure, but he's really not. I know you've talked to him, and I've talked to a lot of people that have done interviews with him. He's a really kind, funny guy.
Yes.
That just has just like this exterior and is known as training and sparring, like one of the hardest spar, like what's the word? One of the hardest sparrers? What's the verb of sparring? Sparrer. This guy can spar with the best of them, is what I'm trying to get. Like, I've heard from Iceman John Scully that they have to slow his ass down in the gym. That's why he's always sparring. Getting hurt.
Oh, yeah. No, I know guys who've been in the gym. I've gone out for a couple camps. First of all, they pay really well because they have
you're getting your ass kicked.
Yeah, but he's looking to knock you out every round. Like he spars the way he fights. We'll put it that way. And there's a reason why he's got 100% KO rating. That's what he brings to it. Obviously, he's got the power, but you know he trains the way he fights. He spars the way he fights. So being his sparring partner is not an ideal job.
Talk about a like horrible job. Like, you remember that show? What is it with Mike Rowe? Bad jobs or whatever?
Bad jobs. That's a bad job.
I'm better. Arthur Bader of a sparring partner. He just beats the shit out of me every day.
Well, Hot Rod, former knockout victim of Beterbiev, has been a sparring partner for a number of camps, and he got much better. Like, much, much better.
Of course. That's the other way to look at it, is like, you know,
if your brain cells don't get scrambled, you can get better.
Right. You have a guy that doesn't understand that it's just sparring. Like, that's, I think that's what Iceman was saying. He's like, he looks at it as a fight. Like he's like he doesn't have like a 50%. He doesn't have a second gear. That's awesome. So who cares that this is not the biggest fight in terms of marketing? It's the best fight you can make in the sport, and it's for us boxing fans. I cannot wait. It's time, everybody, for Chris Algieri's head-to-head Beterbiev and Bivol, four categories: power, speed, defense, IQ. This is highly anticipated because these guys are very much even down the board. But we'll start off with power.
Easy one. Beterbiev, obviously. He's got a 100% KO rating. You can see what he does in there. He's super destructive. And we spoke about the lack of KOs from Bivol, so that's an easy one.
Speed. He can't handle your speed, son.
Speed. This is actually a tricky one. You got to look past it. You know, Beterbiev isn't exactly a slow guy, even though he seems like, oh, you kind of think of him as this plodding tank. He closes distance very smart. He's got a very good, you know, no one with a precise jab, no one who lands as many jabs as he lands is slow. But and when it comes to it, when I'm talking about hand and foot speed and hand-eye coordination, I'm going with Dmitry Bivol on this one. I take him. In terms of his hand speed, he throws in combination very, very quickly. And again, the way he mixes it with his in and out movement leads me to give him the slight edge in speed.
Defense. I think I know where you're going here.
This is another easy one. Obviously, Beterbiev has been down. Beterbiev gets hit. Beterbiev gets bloodied in fights. Dmitry Bivol barely gets touched. He's got one of the best plus minuses. We went over all of this already. So that's a pretty easy one. So it's pretty easy for power to go to Beterbiev. Pretty easy for defense to go to Dmitry Bivol. And then when it comes to speed, pretty, pretty close.
In a really close fight, it's going to come down to whose game plan, who thinks the best in there. This chess match, this high-powered chess match. Ring IQ.
So this is another one that's going to probably look pretty easy. Most people go, oh, we got boxer versus puncher. You know, Dmitry Bivol, he's got that great plus minus. He's got that great in and out movement. He's got such a great judge of range. He's got such an active jab. He's very sharp with his punches. He barely gets hit. But guys, you got to look past the numbers. You got to look past the brutal KOs. Beterbiev can box. He is a fantastic positioning fighter. He's got a great active jab. He's very precise with his punches, even though he's busy. He breaks guys down. He sets things up. So in terms of boxing IQ, guys, I got them even. I think this is as even as it can be in terms of matching up these skill sets and these categories. I can't sit there and be like, yeah, better Bivol is the smarter guy in there. I don't see it. I see a very, very smart, capable and fundamental fighter in Beterbiev. And I've talked to his team about that. They all say that. They're like, he's a much better boxer than he gets credit for. No power puncher who goes to his jab as much as Beterbiev does is not a good or a high boxing IQ. So this is a really close fight. Again, guys, this is why we are so excited for this matchup.
Awesome. Great stuff. Reminds me of Golovkin in terms of the jabs.
Yes. Yes. Golovkin, another guy who would be in the pocket and would get hit at times and get bloodied and whatnot. I always think of the Rosado fight where he was like in there, like bleeding all over the place.
That was a bloody affair. In terms of the jab, I love that part of it too. Like that's how you get knockouts, is you set it up with the jab, and Beterbiev is more than just a puncher, as what we've learned.
He's tricky. He's a very tricky guy. He's not just coming in the front door. Like he is deceptive in the way that he closes the gap. He's deceptive in the way that he sets up power punches with other power punches, and he blinds you with jabs, man. The guy, if you really watch what he does, he's got some really nice moves, especially I think in the Marcus Brown fight, you really got to see that. You know, the way that he was able to throw the liver shot to land the left uppercut, which is one of the knockdowns that happened. He threw a good liver shot against the southpaw so that the liver side was there. Boom, and he comes right up with a left uppercut and busts Marcus's nose, and Marcus goes down a few moments after that. But there was a lot of that, throwing one punch to land another. Beterbiev does that well, and that shows you that he's thinking ahead.
Love it. We'll give our predictions in just a second. We'll talk about the card really quick. Chris Eubank versus Camilo Zaremeta. Zaremeta fought Golovkin a few years ago. I believe you were on the call for that.
I was.
Do remember that. Eubank Jr., so frustrating. Hopefully he gets in a big fight next year. Fabio Wardley, Frazier Clark. This is the people's main event. This is the co-main event.
Fun fight.
It's a rematch.
First fight was fun fight.
Wardley's British Commonwealth title, which you know, those mean something in the UK. Those British domestic titles. Mm-hmm. There's a long history of those, and I learned that the hard way. I remember being like, "What is this stupid belt that they have?" I tweeted that once, and man, oh my god, oof, I got
you got raked over the coals for that one, I'm sure.
And I literally, like, one of the first times I ever, like, issued, like, an apology on Twitter. I was like, "Guys, you tweet as much as I do, you're gonna run into a bad tweet every once in a while." And this was a bad tweet. I apologize. I'll be better. And I will respect your trinkets. I will respect your British Commonwealth belt. I was not familiar with your style over there. Yeah, that was a bad one. But this is for the British Commonwealth title. It's going to be an awesome fight. Jay Opatai. I like him too. I understand Cruiserweight's thin. He's fighting Jack Massey. This is like another washout. But like, there is talk of Opatai fighting the winner of Billiam Smith and Zerto. There is talk of Beterbiev going up to Cruiserweight. So
he's big. I can see him moving up. He's really big. I think he actually cuts a lot of weight.
Who's that?
Opatai.
Yeah, he's talked about it too, and like, he's just in that tweener spot where he's like not big enough to be heavyweight, but he's getting hit a lot too in his last couple fights. And that Brites rematch was awesome. I do like him getting paid, and I like him being active. I just wish better opponents, but it's not his fault. Ben Whitaker will be on the big stage in his theatrics, his antics. Mm-hmm. This guy is interesting, too. He could be something. He gets a lot of eyeballs on him, but he's fighting Liam Cameron. I'm familiar with his game, but I want to see more of Whitaker. I want to see him actually in the ring.
I want to see him step up. Yeah, I want to see him actually, because when he's got all this game and gamesmanship that he does to these poor guys who are hapless, I want to see if he can do that with people who can fight.
I know. And that's another thing on Twitter, like, that I was like, this is lame. Like, when he was doing that to that one guy who was like 10 and 13, it was he was like a late replacement. Dude, I was like, this is so freaking lame. Like, yeah, it's cool. Like, it's going to make the rounds, and Whitaker gained, and it, like, did. Blah, blah, blah. I know he gained like a shit ton of followers, like a 500% increase. But like, I had people tell me this is how he always fights. Like, he's going to do this against the top tier. I was like, I would love to see that. If he fights, I would like,
bet
if
on,
he does
let's
that,
bet on that one.
Bro, if he does that, crown him. If he can, yes. If he does all that stupid shit against a guy that he's up of his talent level, and like, it's like looked at as a step up or an even fight,
or just a dangerous guy in general.
Right, then yeah, let's talk about this guy, because it would be an awesome star in the sport, but I need to see that. Scott Nicholson's fighting Raven Chapman for Nicholson's featherweight title. Significant because I think it's one of the first women's fights in Saudi.
I think it's first women's championship, actually, because I think but there has been women fights before, but not a championship.
Scott Nicholson desperately wants to fight Amanda Serrano. Amanda Serrano's fighting Katie Taylor. Amanda Serrano's at 140. Amanda Serrano's 36 years old. Amanda Serrano's looking for massive paydays. So I guarantee Nicholson will be asked about Amanda Serrano. I'll be with Amanda Serrano this week over in Puerto Rico.
She is a Puerto Rican legend.
Oh, yeah. And she signed three of the fighters that are fighting on this card. That's why it's in Puerto Rico. Jean-Paul Rivera, main event, really good fighter, featherweight. Alex Chaparro, who is 2-0, a little bit of a project. This guy's like a model, and like, you know, it's a real MVP signing. And then Crystal Rosado, who has fought a bunch for MVP, who she's really powerful. So that's Friday night in Cuagas, Puerto Rico. I'll be on the call alongside Nonito Donaire,
Nonito Trejos, the Flash, and Claudia. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, Claudia. That's
good call team.
We had our fighter meeting yesterday. Interested to see Nonito in Puerto Rico, because I've hung out with him in Orlando, and he's a crazy man. Nonito likes his mojitos. Mm. I will say that.
Nonito likes his
mojitos. If I tell
you. It kind of rhymes.
He's Nonito, the coolest, one of the Nonito. Best guys to party with.
Absolutely. Great guy.
Just part fun, has Columbia. Great stories, doesn't give a shit. Yeah, he told me about you guys in the streets of Columbia throwing left hooks.
Yeah. That was fun. That was a post-wedding. Into the streets we went.
Can't wait to get down to Puerto Rico and hang out with the crew. MVP on the zone. All right. With that being said, it is time for our final predictions for Beterbiev versus Bivol. Yeah, drum roll. Thank you. I'll go first because I know everyone's going to lean on Chris's pick because he's the champion and all that. Okay. I've been pretty good with my picks. Beterbiev and Bivol. Bivol and Beterbiev, they're finally getting the fight. This is what happens when you haven't made a pick yet and you're coming up with it on the fly. I think Beterbiev is more likely to instill his style, seek and destroy, get hit a few times, and still go through with it. That's a more sustainable style. That is a more... I just think he'll be able to fight his fight better than Bivol. I don't see Bivol doing what Bivol does for 12 rounds. Even at 33, when he's still in his physical prime, I don't see him being as crisp defensively because he's never fought someone like Beterbiev who will put a pace on him. I like Beterbiev in a split decision.
Whoa. Interesting. Interesting.
Plus yeah, 700.
We need to put some money on that before this show
Rich
comes
man.
Out. I've notoriously been flip-flopping on this one, and it's been based on their performances and when the fight was going to happen, if it was going to happen, all of the above. And I was always a Bivol guy, and I've said that on air many, many times. I was always a Bivol guy in this fight. I thought that I generally lean boxer versus puncher. But then I saw the progression of Beterbiev. That Callum Smith fight really, really showed me something about Beterbiev. I was like, man, this guy can box, and this guy is very, very clever and very smart, because I don't care what you say about Callum Smith, man, that guy is a physical beast. He's a physical phenom. He's tall. He's long. He can punch. He was icing guys at 175. He had nothing for Beterbiev because he got outboxed. So I was really, really impressed with that. So then for a while there, I'm like, I'm going Beterbiev, baby. I'm switching it up. Bivol's not going to win. Beterbiev is too smart. He hits too hard. And then the knee injury. That knee injury really, really wears on me. At 39, going on to 40, I've had that injury. It changed my boxing style. So, and yes, I was much more of a mover than Beterbiev was, but I had a meniscus tear. I ruptured my meniscus prior to the Spence fight, and it changed the way that I fought. So that wasn't that long ago. That being said, I got Bivol by decision, and I think I'm going to make a real bold prediction. If we want to do like some prop bets, I think he drops Beterbiev.
Really?
I think Beterbiev gets aggressive, gets square, and gets hit with a sharp, clean right hand and puts him on his butt. I don't think it hurts him. I think he gets clipped when he goes down, and he gets up, and he roars, and he comes all over Bivol. But I think Bivol weathers it and pulls it out, finishes the fight pretty clean.
So you're saying Bivol, like, what score? I know we're getting into the nitty-gritty here. Like, what score? Like 7-5 or 8-4?
Like 7-5 with a knockdown. You know, like it's a close fight. Like I got Beterbiev, like really, like getting in Bivol's ass.
Opposite ends in the middle. Of the spectrum here.
Opposite ends. But I got Bivol by UD.
Okay, wow, I love it. We're gonna have to make a graphic for that and see who comes out on top. Yeah, I could see a little bit of everything in this.
Yeah,
fight.
That's the beauty of this. Like as much as you can't be wrong. Of course, you can be wrong, but like. You can just throw out whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to probably change my mind 3 or 4 more times before Saturday. I can see a lot of things happening in this fight. I hope everyone enjoys it. Like, sit down, watch this fight, take it all in. Don't get lost in the sauce. Don't think about pay-per-view numbers. Not on pay-per-view.
No.
Don't think
just
about...
Enjoy.
Just enjoy, like, real fighting. Just enjoy two guys at the top of their game still who are going to try to impose their will and establish themselves pound for pound. Establish himself as the best of this generation. Good stuff. And remember, it's on ESPN Plus. If you're searching for this fight, if you're out there looking for it, where the heck is this fight? ESPN Plus, and it's a late afternoon in the U.S., or especially on the East Coast. I'll be flying back from Puerto Rico. Hopefully there's no delays. Or I'll be watching on my phone. Everyone in the eye of this hurricane in Milton, I know we have listeners in South Florida and Florida. You know, I hope everyone is okay, Chris. I hope you're good. We talked off air. You said you're fine. But everyone out there that's in the eye of this, I hope everyone is okay. And you're taking precautions because that's some scary stuff. But I'm ready for this fight. I cannot wait. Beterbiev Bivol. Hope you enjoyed our preview. I got Beterbiev by decision. Chris has Bivol.
Bivol by decision.
Wow.
Polar opposites, boys.
Love it, everybody. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect those DMs. Protect them.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.